Like, folks, folks, Merry Christmas.
Hey!
Oh,
there he is!
Look at how big you got, old baby.
Merry Christmas,
honey. Oh, Mom.
Knock on the door. You promised.
You know, they took a pint of fluid out of my lower back.
You see this mole? This mole on my neck? You think it's changing color?
No. Well, you keep touching it, it's getting redder.
I got hemorrhoids. Can you believe that?
Oh, Mother.
Isn't that terrible?
You're not getting the garage space.
You did my automobile. I'm doing the parking. Russ, you want to help me?
They're not sleeping in my room. I want to go crazy.
So there, sweetheart.
Your grandma Nora's got a real painful burr on my heel. And if you rub it for me, I'll give you a whole quarter.
Okay? A quarter.
And I'll give Audrey a quarter, too, Audrey.
I'm going to park my car in the
garage.
This is what Christmas is all about. I'll park the cars and check the luggage, and I'll be outside for the season.
Oh, man. Well, hey, welcome to Cross Points this morning. It's great to have you here. My name's Kurt, and are you guys ready for that? Are you ready for the family? Yes! Man, we're getting ready, aren't we? Hey, it's hard to believe that we are halfway through the month of December already, and we're right in the throes of the fullness of the Christmas season. And I don't know, you know, it's crazy to think, as Eric said, we are down. This is our final Sunday here at Cross Point. Can you believe that? And this next week, we start Christmas Eve services, a whole slew of them. And somebody actually asked, they said, do we really not have church next Sunday? And we're like, no, we don't. We really don't. And there's really two reasons why. I'll just explain it to you real quick. One is it's just one of the ways that we remind ourselves we're not all that religious here. We're spiritual, but we're not, it's not like it's Sunday, so we have to be in church. Some of you guys come on Thursday, and you never come on Sunday, except for today, if you're a Thursday crowd person. On Christmas Eve, we really go for maximum impact. And so all of our services next weekend are really, you know, they're scheduled at times where we believe we're going to have maximum impact, where you can invite friends, family. So Thursday evening, Christmas Eve, before you leave, if you're heading out of town, you know, kids are in school through Friday, you're going to be gone next week. Man, don't miss Christmas Eve here at Cross Point. Join us Thursday evening. And then, of course, Monday night, two services, Tuesday night, three services. And all different times. So, you know, none of our services are the normal times or the same as last year. And then no services, as you heard, the following weekend or the following Thursday, and we kick off January 5th. So just a way for us to, after we push through Christmas Eve, to give all of our volunteers and leaders a time of rest as we prepare for the next year. Today, though, we're in week number 3 of this series, Oh, What Fun. You guys having fun in the Christmas season so far? Yes, oh my word, it is fun. That's somewhat of a sarcastic title for our series this year. And yet, at the same time, you may not know this, but you have 9 shopping days left. 9 days, counting today. I don't mean to make anybody nervous, but 9 days. The next 9 days are going to be crazy, going to be some of the busiest days of the year, most stress-filled days of the year. You're going to have office parties, and you're going to have, you know, Christmas programs, and you're going to have family gatherings and year-end reports and busy malls, and Amazon's going to load your porch and empty your bank account. All that's going to happen, you know, over the next few days. And there's, of course, those out-of-town guests who just stay way too long.
So, when did you get the tenement on wheels?
Oh, that there, that's an RV. Yeah, I borrowed it off a buddy of mine. He took my house, I took the RV. It's a good-looking vehicle, ain't it?
Yeah, it's so nice parked in the driveway.
Yeah, it sure does. But don't you go falling in love with it now, because we're taking it with us when we leave here next month.
Oh, anybody have a relative like that that's not sitting next to you right now? Yeah, fun of the season. You know, if I'm really honest, though, I get to about this point, December 15th, and I kind of wish the season were a bit longer. Anybody else wish the season were a bit longer? Like, you're already like, man, it's going way too fast. I just long for a few more days, sipping a cup of coffee in the mornings next to the tree, taking in the lights and, you know, reading the story and, you know, evenings with Ray Charles, Christmas on. It's our favorite, you know what I'm talking about? Ray Charles Christmas. Yes. Oh my word. It's my favorite thing in the evenings. Maybe a glass of wine around the tree, you know, family gathered around the TV with a fire on with another Christmas movie. And it's not just Christmas that I feel, you know, things just don't last long enough. I mean, I just feel like in life, there's so many things that it's like they're here and before you know it, they're gone. And so I just came up with a list of the top five things that Kurt wished would last longer. You want to know my list this morning? You're like, I don't know if I do want to know your list. It's PG, just so you know, PG list. Five things Kurt wished last longer. All right, number one, phone batteries. You know what I'm talking about with phone batteries? If you don't have the iPhone 11, you wish your phone battery lasted longer, right? Number two, naps. Anybody wish their naps lasted longer? Yes, always good for a nap to last longer. Number three, how about the football season? Ooh, a little mixed response on that. The guys are all in on that. The ladies not, maybe some of the ladies not so much. How about this one, gum flavor? You know, like when you're two chews in, it's like I got Silly Putty in my mouth already. Gum flavored, be good to last longer. And then my favorite, personal favorite, deodorant protection. And you know who you are, by the way. And if you don't know who you are and somebody's doing this right now, you're the one. Deodorant protection. So, you know, we're surrounded by things that just don't last long enough. It seems like so many things don't. And this morning, I want us to talk about someone who does. In fact, 700 years before Jesus ever came onto the scene, there was a guy named Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, and he talked about this coming Messiah. And he gave some descriptors to what he was going to be. And here's some of the things he said. He said, "For unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called," and in fact, he gives these names to what the Messiah, the coming Messiah, 700 years later is going to be called. He said, "You will call him Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace." And so throughout this series, we've been taking a look at each of these descriptors to really try to understand what do these mean and how do they actually relate to our lives today. And we're going to look today at this idea of everlasting Father, this idea that Jesus is eternal. All right, so just a quick time out for just a moment, because some of you are like, everlasting Father? I thought, it's like the elephant in the room for a moment, conversation. I thought God was the Father, right? Like God's the Father, Jesus is the Son. Why are we referring to Jesus as the everlasting Father? Well, if you were thinking that, some of you are like, it's too early to connect those dots. But if you were thinking that, you're actually right. Though in the ancient audiences back, you know, hundreds of years before Jesus came on the scene, they wouldn't necessarily attach a paternal identifier to the word father in the original Hebrew language. And so the word father actually meant way more than just a paternal kind of idea. It actually also meant originator of or the author of. And so think about this for a moment. This is a fantastic word picture that Jesus is coming as the originator or author of the eternal. Simply put, Jesus is forever because he invented forever. And think about that for a moment. I mean, this idea that, and I don't want you to miss this, that not only did Jesus create forever, I mean, marvel about that for a moment. You're like, whoa, that to wrap your mind around that's kind of a big concept. But he didn't want to keep forever to himself. He wanted to share it with everyone that he created. In fact, in Ecclesiastes, we find this wisdom writer say this. He says, "He has planted eternity in the human heart." I mean, just breathe that in for a moment. Jesus has planted the seed of eternity in your heart. And it wasn't like he just spoke it into us. It wasn't like he taught it to us or presented it to us. No, he planted it deep within our hearts. And so this is why so many times we look at things and we're like, man, I just wish this would last a little longer. Or we experience certain things and they seem just a bit hollow, or they seem like, you know, we're just barely, you know, we're scratching the veneer. There's got to be something deeper right here. Well, it's because as we read right here, regardless of where we are in the spiritual landscape, God has planted eternity through Christ into our hearts. And I don't know about you, but I just struggle a bit to wrap my brain around this whole idea of eternity. And one of the reasons is because, you know, my life, probably like yours, it's governed by the tick-tock of the clock, right? I mean, and I have clocks all around me. I mean, I go to my kitchen, I have a clock on my microwave, a clock on my stove, clock on the wall. I get in my car, and there's a clock on my car, there's a clock on my phone. I've even, for fashion, have a clock on my wrist, right? So all around me, I have something reminding me of how quickly the seconds of life are just kind of ticking away. And yet Jesus comes, he says, "I'm the everlasting Father." Jesus is the eternal. And he says, "I've planted a seed of that deep within your heart." Now let me just hit the brakes for a moment, because for some of us, this whole idea of eternity is a bit ethereal. We're like, oh man, it is a bit elusive to really grasp what eternity is. Others of you are like, you're like, nope, I totally get eternity, man. I've been here before, Kurt. I've heard you talk. I grasp the idea of sitting through something that feels like an eternity, right? I mean, so you might be like, hey, I get eternity a bit. But seriously, if we really think about it, eternity can be a bit elusive, right? I mean, isn't it hard to wrap our minds around? I mean, because we're so here in the now. I mean, we're so driven by like the emails that are in our inbox and filling our inbox right now and the schedule requests that we're getting right now for this week and all the things that are coming at us. And, you know, isn't it true that the things that are loudest and closest are the things that get our attention the most? And so we just find ourselves living in this moment, and then we jump from this moment to that moment to the next moment and the next moment. Before long, I'm like, I'm exhausted by doing that. And so we don't even feel like we have time to think about the eternal. I mean, if we're honest, it's like we tend to think about eternity as something that I'm going to deal with like later, like way later, like when I die later, right? And don't we have some like pretty crazy ideas about the eternal? I mean, I don't know how you grew up and how heaven or eternity was described or presented to you, but for some of us, I know in the church I grew up in, it was like a lot of harp playing, like a lot of harp music, and I'm like, I don't really dig harp music, so is there a plan B? Because I think I'm out on that. And then somebody said, well, you know, eternity is like an eternal choir practice. I'm like, God help me, I think I went out right now. And then if like you went to a Christmas pageant, you saw everybody was in white bathrobes, right? Like everybody's going to be dressed in white bathrobes in eternity. I'm like, it would be a sin to put this heavenly body in a bathrobe. You know what I'm saying? Your laughter hurts me a bit. I have to admit, I will be fine, just so you know. But see, eternity, this whole conversation about eternity, you know, it got me thinking this week. I thought, you know, what are some of the things that I wish would just last a bit longer? That I just had a few more minutes with, that would extend a little more, that wouldn't end. And it took me to things like creation. It took me to moments like I was flipping through my phone. I saw this sunrise. I don't know if you've ever had a sunrise where you just captured it on your phone. Maybe you're on vacation on the beach somewhere, and you're like, if this moment right here could pause for like ever, and I could just continue to soak this moment in, that would be awesome. It happened on my front porch again. Another sunrise earlier this fall. I was sitting with my daughter waiting for her bus, and we just captured this moment. All the hues of orange and pink and red, and I mean, I just remember saying to her, Meredith, I wish this moment would just last forever right here. It was just a beautiful moment. It happens with my kids. In fact, I recently ran across one of our photos from when our fourth child was born, Meredith. And this is right after she came home from the hospital right now, right here. And it just reminded me of how quickly time passes. And so we had baby child dedications last weekend. And so every time we even do baby child dedications, you know, I remember standing up here when we dedicated each of our kids. And it just reminds me that that was like years ago, but it feels like it was yesterday. In fact, if you were here for baby child dedications last weekend, sometimes people are like, what do you give those people when they walk off the stage? You know, they walk off and it's like they can hardly handle what you're handing them. Well, let me show you just out of, you know, because some of you are curious. If you've never dedicated a child here recently, you get some really cool parting gifts. Even if your kids are like 45, you might want to bring them and dedicate them because you get some really cool things. So, you know, one of the things I give is I give a letter, you know, just to the child, because if they're really young, they're not going to remember this moment. It's kind of like, hey, your parents dedicated themselves and you know, to God's plans and purposes. And so, you know, we just want you to know they really actually did that. They didn't just tell you about it. And then, you know, if you're a little guy or girl, you get a cute little onesie with our multiplication value or hill on it. The only, you know, sector of people here that get this are people who are dedicated, children who are dedicated. And so if you want a multiplication t-shirt, that's where you go. Now here's where the weight comes in. Every family gets a legacy jar of marbles for their child that's being dedicated. Now here's what's cool about this. In this jar are 936 marbles. And each marble represents 1 week of that child's life from the moment they're born till they go away and graduate from high school and get ready to go to college. 936 weeks. Seems like an eternity, almost 1,000 weeks. But I tell you what, they go quick. This sounds a little depressing. It's really not. It's really meant to be intentional. But Moses, in the Psalms, he says, Lord, teach me to order my days so I can live with a heart of wisdom. Teach me to understand that my days are numbered so I can order my days so I can live with a heart of wisdom. And so we take that concept and say, you know, if every week represents one marble and every week we take one marble out, then it really helps us to order our days. We begin to realize that time is very finite, at least on this earth. I don't have an infinite amount of time on this earth with my children. And so how do I make the most of those weeks and months, you know, as we go through the child rearing years? And so this is where each of our children start. Let me just tell you kind of a sobering moment. I suggested my oldest daughter's marble jar, and here's what's left. And it made my heart, you know, get sad for just a moment. We've got 35 weeks with her. She graduates this spring. And I tell you, it reminds us that time goes so fast. Yeah, here you see them now. These are our four kids 10 years later. And I don't know where the time went. I mean, before long, she's going to be graduating high school. And she's going to be getting married. And then moving out of the house, hopefully in a different order than that. Hope she moves out of the house first, then gets married. Fingers crossed. But the time goes so quickly. You know, it happens in times of loss. I don't know if you've ever been in those final moments when, you know, someone is entering those final breaths of their life. It's one of the unique things being a pastor. You know, there's many times where I've been present in those final moments and sat with someone, you know, in those final hours, minutes before they passed. And you know, there's something just kind of, I don't know what it is. It's like a sense that you get. I can't fully explain it. That everybody there just wishes they had one more moment. One more cup of coffee. You know, one more like moment to hear a story. One more Thanksgiving, one more Christmas together. I mean, it's like, you know, in your soul, you wish I had a few moments longer. Because it just feels like this time is fleeting. I've even had these moments about myself where I've felt myself like, gosh, there's gotta be more to life than this. Am I ordering the things in my life appropriately? Am I making a difference? Am I making an impact with my life? Am I spending the hours in my day the way I need to spend them for maximum impact? Am I accomplishing enough? And in those moments, you know, we get that sense of there's got to be more. And Jesus comes, and he comes and is titled the Everlasting Father, the author and originator of eternity. And in that moment, I begin to realize, see, I don't want just joy. I want eternal joy. I don't just want, like, love, you know, that is here today and gone tomorrow. I want, like, eternal love. I don't just want, you know, a purpose that matters right now and in the moment, but tomorrow is God. I want to be tying into something bigger than myself. I want an eternal purpose. And this is where I just think the everlasting tugs at all of us in different ways, different shapes, different forms. But it's like God planted this seed in us to long for something more than 401ks and bigger houses and nicer cars. In fact, John, one of the authorized biographers of Jesus' life, one of the gospel writers, he's likely one of Jesus' closest friends. And one of the reasons we believe this is in his gospel, near the end, when Jesus is actually hanging on the cross, Jesus says to John, John, behold your mother. Mother, behold your son. And he's really referring to his mom. He's basically saying, John, as I get ready to die here on the cross, I want you to treat my mom like your mom. Like that's how close you are to me. And so John, he writes the gospel according to John, but he also, we believe, wrote 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, three letters later in the New Testament. And so John, he understands who Jesus is. He spent more time than probably anybody with Jesus. Here's what he says about him. He says, we want to tell you about the one, he's referring to Jesus here, who was from the beginning. And so he's just trying to make clear that, you know, Jesus is way before the nativity moment, right? He was way before the stable moment where Jesus arrived in the stable. He was there at the beginning, right? He originates at the very beginning of all creation. He said, we have seen him with our eyes. We've heard him with our ears. We've even touched him physically, tangibly with our hands. This one is the manifestation of the life-giving voice, the voice that spoke creation into existence that we read in Genesis chapter 1. And he showed us real life, eternal life. We've seen it all, and we can't keep what we've witnessed quiet. We have to share it with you. And we're inviting you to experience eternal life through the one, meaning Jesus, who was with the Father and came down to us. So this is what's so cool about Christmas. Christmas is a moment where God rushed forward to show us exactly what he looked like through his son, Jesus. And John's telling us right here, Jesus is the one that actually brings that seed that's planted in you that longs for something more, that wishes things just lasted a bit longer. He's like, that seed, you're actually longing for the eternal. Jesus comes to bring us that. In other words, eternal life isn't some product of like some intellectual enlightenment. Like, oh, I got to get into a dual reality. It's not some sense of like an intangible, mystical, you know, aura of some kind. He's like, no, Jesus was the author of eternity. He came to satisfy that seed, that longing that we have for something more. And he said he was real. He came in the flesh. We saw him. We touched him. We heard him with our ears. And he came to help us have a broader experience, a more meaningful experience in life by tapping into eternal things. And so what does that look like? How does that play out in our lives? Well, I want to give you three kind of quick hitters on this morning. Three ways we experience Jesus as an everlasting Father. And so the first one is Jesus came to bring us eternal purpose. He came to bring us eternal purpose. And this kind of recognizes that every single one of us are divine image bearers. Every single one of us, regardless of where you are in the spiritual landscape, whether you've been coming here for years, whether you grew up going to church or you've never been in church before, and this is your first time, you're like, it's Christmas, I think I ought to go to church and kind of try to figure this Jesus thing out. Understand that you are a divine image bearer. God actually created you in his image. And the goal here on earth isn't to white knuckle it for 80 or 90 years and try to make it through this life and then get swept away into some eternal reality. No, he says, you are made in my likeness. I want you to be a part of the work that I'm doing in restoring the world right here around you. But could there be a better purpose to give our lives to? I mean, could there be a better thing to commit our lives to? I mean, so many times we think the Christian life is just hunkering down and trying to make it through, right? Wait it out, and then we're going to get up there with harps and bathrobes. And Jesus says, no, I want you to join me right now in the redeeming work I'm doing all around you. And I tell you what, over the next 9 days, there are going to be tons of ways for you to do this. In fact, even at a cross point today, there's tons of ways for this to happen. Let me just give you a couple snapshots. You heard about a couple of them. The meal box is going out today. Over 200 meal boxes going out to families today to feed families in the greater Indianapolis area. We're going to feed about 2,500 people that otherwise will not have food this week or next week. I got a text from a friend of mine yesterday. He said, is it crazy that a 40-year-old guy is crying in the aisle of Kroger every time I put something in my cart? Because I walk to the fridge all the time. I'm like, oh my gosh, no, that's not crazy at all. Thanks for reminding me of how significant it is that we're maybe not changing somebody's eternal trajectory by giving them a meal to have at Christmas, but you know what we are doing? We're showing that there is still peace and goodwill and hope among men, and that a generosity that comes that Jesus, washed over our life that we want to wash into other people's lives. So, man, as you're bringing those boxes back today, you're actually bringing hope and goodwill to people and showing them that there's a generosity that's eternal. I mean, there's opportunities if you want to still fund a box. I think we got like 8 boxes that aren't funded so far. You can, fund a box for $60. You can drop it in the joy box, or you can go in the app and just pick the spread some cheer designation. $60 will feed about 10 to 12, 15 people over this next week. If you want to go on and deliver boxes today, maybe you don't have any plans, we've got a lunch coming in. You can stay after second hour, meet in the commons at 12:15, 12:30, have lunch, and then we'll go out all over the Indianapolis area and deliver these boxes this afternoon. I tell you what, you will see hope in action. You'll see love in action. It's one of the ways we touch the eternal, that Jesus invites us into what he's doing. Christmas Eve at Crosspoint begins again this Thursday, 4 days. I don't know that there's a better opportunity to invite somebody to church in a better moment than at Christmas Eve. You know why? Because your friends, if they're not into church, they know the songs and they know the story. And that makes my job really hard on Christmas Eve because everybody knows what they're coming to hear, right? And so, but it's a time when people are interested in coming to church at Christmas. And I tell you what, you guys have been fantastic inviters. I've had 2 people this week tell me those scrapers really work. In fact, I had a guy I coached with yesterday. I coached basketball across the street for 4th graders. And my assistant coach said, hey, I got invited to your Christmas Eve service. Somebody beat me to it. They said, yeah, one of my best friends gave me a scraper and said, hey, we'd love to have you join us. I'm like, awesome. So well done, Crosspoint. And I want to give you a hand for being us on this. Fantastic. But see, it's not just coming and holding the candle and singing songs. And, we're actually inviting people into a moment to see that there's a Jesus that wants to connect with them. And that this event that took place on the other side of the world in a little dust bowl of a town that was just a blip on a map in the middle of a time span that nobody really recognized the significance, that something was birthed that's still changing the world today. And that 2,000 years later, men, women, and children still gather, sometimes in public, sometimes in private, on this upcoming weekend to celebrate this one baby that changed everything. And we get the opportunity to be a part of that. I mean, if you're serving here at Christmas Eve, if you're not serving, I think we still have like 22 spots available of serving opportunities and kids and in coffee and greeters. I mean, it's a great way to tie in and be like, man, as my friends, as people come into this place, I get to be a part of their story. This may be the best Christmas ever for some of the people that walk into this place over the next few days. Because all of a sudden, their trajectory has changed because they've experienced the meaning of Christmas in a significant way. And you have the opportunity to be a part of that. I mean, if you want to serve on our teams, mark that on the back of your connection card. It's a great opportunity to tie into the purpose that Jesus invites us to. One other little sneak peek. Next weekend, as we do every year at Christmas Eve, we have an offering that we do. And really, it's something that is designated for a mission or somebody who's just changing the world in a unique way. And so next weekend, all undesignated funds, all loose cash, anything that isn't designated as Dream Big Initiative or your tithe is going to go to Seeds of Hope. Seeds of Hope began in the seats 4 years ago where you guys are sitting right now during one of our fall journeys. And it began because there was a couple who just had a burden for one of their own children. And so they had a burden to grow opportunities for intellectually and developmentally disabled young men and to begin to harvest hope for their lives. A place to mentor young men who can't necessarily go into the workplace because they aren't cognitively or at least they have some deficiencies or some disabilities that keep them from being able to track on that front. Or they're not able to go to school. And so how do we mentor them and create a place where they can live out the purpose in their life? And so Steve and Wendy Holtz, they created Seeds for Hope. And 4 years later, it's done some incredible things. In fact, I want you to hear a bit of their story right here.
I wanted to build a community that was loving, kind, and understanding that not everybody is wired the same way. And I really wanted to help a group of people to live as independently as they possibly could. One of the things that we wanted to do with Seeds of Hope was develop a variety of employable skills. So our typical day here at Seeds of Hope is a 6-hour day, and everybody is paid their wage for the full 6 hours that they're here. So they're paid for their lunch, they're paid for their exercise, they're paid for their Bible study, they're paid for every part, because all of those pieces I think are important in the growth of our partners. They need to know that God hasn't made a mistake here, that they have purpose, and we want to help them find that purpose.
You know, there's gratification when you do good work and you get to see that, and you know, there's just a sense of fulfillment. And one of the things that Steve has said from the beginning is every single one of these young adults, you know, God made on purpose for a purpose. And when they start fulfilling that purpose, they do. They have a different demeanor. They are starting to believe the truth that they are fearfully and wonderfully made.
Cool as that. Let's thank Steve and Wendy. I don't know if they're in here this morning, but man, very, very cool stuff happening at Seeds of Hope that are changing young men's lives. And we get the opportunity to be a part of that next weekend if you want to give to that. See, Jesus invites us into his eternal purpose. He says, I want you to be a part of the redeeming work I'm doing. In fact, Dallas Willard, he put it this way. He said, the point of the gospel is getting into heaven before you die. Get into heaven before you die. Now, this is right out of the Lord's Prayer. You know, Jesus, his disciples, as he was, you know, mentoring them, they said to him one day, they said, Jesus, teach us how to pray. Teach us how to pray. And one of the most recognizable phrases in the Lord's Prayer is this right here. He says, your kingdom come, your will be done. Pray this way. And then where does he say it's going to happen? On earth as it is in heaven. He says, I want to begin to happen right here, right now. And see, part of the very essence of your and my DNA, a seed was planted in us to usher eternity in, here and now, in our neighborhoods, in our marriages, as we're coaching sports teams, as we're, you know, in the workplace, as we're in our kids' schools, you know, as students, as you're in your school. He says, I want you to usher that in, that kind of hope into people's lives and everything we do. Second thing is everlasting Father. He offers his eternal love. Eternal love. This is a persevering love. It's a love that has no brim or bottom, right? It's a love that has no condition or limits. And I think this is important to capture because we talk about love a lot, you know, in church settings, and rightfully so. I mean, it's a really important piece. But here's what I'd say about this. Eternal love is a no small print, no strings attached kind of love. I mean, it's one of the reasons here, if you came here because you got a postcard or maybe you saw some of our promotion in the community and we have this whole line, we say, you know, Crosspoint's a place with dim lights and easy exits if you change your mind. No strings attached. Just try it out. Man, we just want you to come and see if there's something that connects you, because we believe that's the kind of God that draws us to him. He's like, hey, I just want you to come and see, check it out and see if there's something within me that you connect with. And it's kind of a cool thing because Jesus loves us exactly as we are, not as we ought to be. And let's be honest, none of us are as we ought to be, myself included. I mean, so many times we live and we're like, oh my gosh, what if I make a mistake? Is God going to leave me? No, he says, you're at home with me. You're safe with me. And then last, he gives us an eternal joy. This everlasting Father brings an eternal joy. And this is a deep, sustaining joy. It's not the kind of joy that sways with the circumstances of today and changes with the winds of tomorrow. It's not rooted in circumstances or emotion. Anybody ever been to bed? You know, like you go to bed at night and you're like really happy and you wake up like in a really foul mood. My kids tell me I do it all the time. You know, it's like you go to bed and you're like, man, it's good. And then you wake up and you hit the snooze button and you're like, why am I in such a foul mood? You're like, you got a whole day full of meetings or you got a hard conversation you need to have or something you're not looking forward to. And you just kind of, like the circumstances change, right? And it like sucks the happiness right out of you. Well, see, joy is different than happiness. Joy finds its source in somebody greater than ourselves, some entity greater than ourselves outside ourselves. Joy and happiness are very, very different. See, joy makes it possible to look back at moments of sorrow and pain and grief and know that those don't define me. And there's actually an entity that gives me the power to actually move through those moments. See, joy allows me to see that my losses are not, and my greatest kind of moments of failure are not the end of my story, that they don't have to define my future. See, joy is way different than happiness. This is one of the reasons the angel, when the angel came and said, hey, good news, you know, there's great joy. It's because he said, hey, there's something that's coming outside of yourself that's going to get you out of the difficulty that you're in right now. And see, the other thing about joy is joy doesn't ignore that bad stuff's all around us. It's not like we have to live in this fairy tale land of just everything's great all the time. No, sometimes life sucks, but we can still have joy. And you know, it reminds us that our sorrow and our pain or our grief does not have to be the end of the story. About a year ago, I had the chance to sit with my grandfather as my grandmother was in her final moments. And they were in two different places. She was in a nursing care facility. He was in an assisted living facility. And I went to see her first, and I didn't even recognize her. In fact, I walked right by her room, looked in, said, well, that's not her. And then I'm like, well, that's my dad in there. And so I went back and realized, you know, she was in her last days. Her body had just kind of wasted away even since I'd seen her last. And she deteriorated. She was gasping for her last breaths. And I spent all the time with her. But then I went, you know, after that and stopped by to see my grandfather a couple miles away. And as soon as I showed up at his apartment, I walked in. He said, Curtis, is she still hanging on? I said, yeah, Grandpa, she's like pretty close, but she's hanging on. And a tear just kind of filled the corner of his eye. And he looked at me and said, you know, she was a wonderful partner for 70 years. And he said, but I told her yesterday, I don't know that I'm going to see you again. This is probably goodbye for now until we're on the other side of eternity. And I felt the sorrow in that moment of knowing that the person I spent the last 70 plus years with is passing from this physical life. But see, my grandfather had an eternal view too. He knew that that sorrow did not get the last word on the story and that there was going to be a reconnection in eternity. Because see, eternal joy means your sorrow, your grief, your pain does not get the last word. I mean, do you need that kind of joy this morning? You need that kind of joy for like the next 9 days, 10 days. Well, the Apostle Paul, he was always writing young Christians, and he's writing these young Christians in the city of Corinth, and they were known for living for the temporary, the right here and now, you know, and not really grasping the eternal. And here's what he writes to them. He says, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Since what is seen is, and what's the word right there? Temporary. But what is unseen is eternal. Now, I'm going to be honest, I struggle to do this. I struggle a lot. I mean, it's incredibly difficult to just keep focused all the time on the eternal. I mean, I feel like I get glimpses of it at moments, and I'm right back in the moment. It's almost like I glance at it, and then I'm right back in the moment. You guys feel that way? I feel like you live that way so many times? You know what I usually fix my eyes on? The things that are noisiest in my life, the things that are most urgent in my life, my inbox, you know, my bills that keep rolling into my mailbox every day. All right, now I'm not saying don't answer your emails and certainly don't stop paying your bills. That's a good thing. Keep doing that. All right, we just have a tendency to focus on the immediate. Paul says, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't get so consumed with just the immediate. This is when I fix our eyes on the author and the originator of the eternal. He says it changes the way we live and we operate. And we begin to see that chasm between secular and spiritual just kind of wipe away, because everything is a spiritual moment. Conversations, they matter. You know, interactions, moments, checking out at the checkout line at Kroger. You know, they all matter. They're all spiritual moments. In fact, when you came in today, you received a gift tag. It looks like this. Why don't you go ahead and take that out? We're not helping you wrap gifts later today. We had a purpose for this little thing. So why don't you take this out, grab the pen that you received when you came in, or a pen that you have. Because see, here's what I know about fixing our eyes. It requires intentionality. Meaning, like has anybody ever just accidentally got ripped? You're just like, oh man, my abs, I don't know where they came from, but they're amazing. It just doesn't happen that way, right? Or have you accidentally got wealthy? No, I mean, unless you got like an unexpected inheritance, but it just doesn't happen. You plan, you know, you get wealthy usually because you've planned and been intentional. And the same is true with our life. And so here's what I want us to do before we leave today. I want us to do this. I don't want you to do it later today or tomorrow. I want you on this tag. I want you to choose a word that you need for the rest of the season. Something that ties you into the eternal. A word that maybe will get you through the rest of the Christmas season. And then what I'm going to ask you to do is attach this to your keychain or to your purse or your backpack or your steering wheel or your rearview mirror, wherever you're going to see it, you know, regularly over the next few days. Because it's going to get crazy. I can guarantee you over the next 9 days are going to be crazy. And there's going to be swings of emotion and family issues and work issues and life issues and financial issues. And we're just going to need something to fix our eyes on that is eternal. It's a little more than just the here and the now. And so your word might be trust. You know, maybe your word this Christmas, you're like, I don't want to go through another Christmas not trusting anybody. Maybe you've had trust issues. Maybe something happened that caused you to not trust. And you're carrying everything on your own. And you're like, man, I'm so tired of doing that. And God, I want to learn to trust. Help me to trust you even. So maybe your word's trust. Maybe your word for you is margin. Maybe you've done a lousy job at self-care. And maybe you've not even taken a moment to just do a and have like a 10-second breath. And maybe your word is margin, and you just need to make sure you carve out time for the things and the people that are most important over the next 9 days. Or maybe your word is courage. And maybe there's some conversations that you've had, and you're like, man, I should have been a little more forward in this situation, or there's a moment where I should have moved on something and I just didn't, and I just need courage. Or maybe your word's boldness. Maybe you're like, God, I just want to have the boldness to love people like you love people. Give me that kind of boldness, God. Maybe that's your word. Maybe it's joy. Maybe you just need a joy that supersedes your circumstances, that reminds you that my grief I'm in right now, my sorrow, what the pain I'm experiencing, it does not get the last word, and there's an eternal joy. Maybe it's another word. Whatever your word is, just I want you to write it on your, just take a moment and put pen to paper right now. Just write it on your tag. Whatever God's nudging on your heart right now, let's maybe assume that's what he's planting in your heart that you need as you get through the rest of the season and you experience the fullness of what he has. So what's the one word you're going to fix your eyes on? You know, in Matthew's account of the Christmas story, when Jesus arrives, he's given this label, this title, this word, this name called Emmanuel, which means God is, like present tense, is with us. And then when you fast forward to the end of Matthew's account of the gospel story, to the very end, I mean, like the last chapter, chapter 28, Jesus is kind of giving some parting words to his team right before he ascends to heaven. And he says this, he says, I am with you always to the very end of the age. See, we have this eternal, everlasting Father. And he's not off on some distant planet somewhere. He's not standing with his arms crossed waiting for you to get your life together. No, he invites you. He's restoring, redeeming right now as we speak, and he invites us into it. And he offers us everlasting joy, an everlasting love, and an everlasting purpose for all who are willing to receive it. In fact, he even gave us a tangible experience, which we're going to share in this morning. He gave us something we could feel, taste, sense, something that's lasted the test of time. Some call it the Eucharist, the Mass, the Communion, Lord's Supper. And so we're going to share in this meal that Jesus left for his team, his followers, people who are following after his heart. And this is something that people who are pursuing Jesus have been doing for thousands of years. This reminds us of his everlasting nature. In fact, it started when he was meeting with his team right before he went to the cross. And he took a piece of bread, just something that was on the table. They're having a full meal. And he took a piece of bread and he said, every time you eat this bread from this day forward, I want you to remember my body, which is about to be broken for you. Now, they didn't fully understand what that meant. They didn't understand that he was going to the cross. He told them, but they didn't grasp it. But he said, you know, I'm going to be beaten to within an inch of my life. I mean, I'm going to take, you know, lashes. They're going to thrash my body. I'm doing this all on your behalf. I'm going to supersede the temporary, the momentary, all the pain of this moment, because I've got an eternal focus for you. And so he said, I just want you to have something to remind you that I was thinking of eternity when I thought of you. And then he picked up the cup off the table, likely wine. We've got juice in these today. And he said, every time you drink this cup, I want you to remember the new covenant, which I established on the cross, will be establishing through the shedding of my blood. See, there always had to be something giving of his life source in order for there to be a forgiveness of sin. So Jesus said, I'm going to be the lamb. I'm going to shed my life, my blood, to cover the sins of the world. So every time you drink this cup, I just want you to remember that this is a reminder that I paved the way so things could be made right between you and God. And so as we share in this today, we're going to invite you in just a moment to come to the tables and to present your life. Then we invite you to the table. If this doesn't represent your life, if you've not taken a step of faith to receive Jesus as your Savior, I'm going to ask you to observe this morning. Or if you want to make this your first communion, if you want to receive him today, I don't think there's a better time of year to receive Jesus into your life and his grace than at Christmas time. So you can do that by just saying, Jesus, I want to receive your grace today. I want to know your grace. Would your grace just flow into my life? Forgive me of my sins. And make this your first communion. So let's stand. And I'm going to pray for us, and we're going to sing a few songs that remind us of the eternal. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this moment. We thank you for coming as an everlasting Father that would supersede the pain, the difficulty, the challenges we may be feeling in our life right now. That you came to be something that would override and bring a different source of joy into our lives. Some of us need that this morning. Just meet us wherever we are this morning, God, in the way that only you uniquely can. And as we share in this bread and as we share in this cup, may it remind us of your everlasting nature, that you're with us till the end of the age, and that you did everything possible to make a pathway for things to be made right between us and you. And we thank you for that, Jesus. In your name we pray. Amen.